This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey, this is Annie, and you're listening to Stuff Mom Never Told You. Today, we have a very special bonus episode for you just in time for Christmas. And we also have a special guest, my good friend, Katie. We started out as roommates in college, and we would go every Friday to La Perea. Mm-hmm. And we would get a student discount at the movie theater. Yeah, every Friday. And we saw a lot of bad movies. And we continue to see a lot of bad movies.
Yes, but we never really watched Christmas movies. We were very much into the horror more than anything else.
Yes, and there is the sweet spot of Christmas horror movies.
Oh, I do love those. And they are universally bad, but yeah. I love them.
Yes, so if you couldn't tell, today we're going to be talking about some holiday movie tropes because one thing that you are an expert in is holiday movies.
Yes, I would say specifically the Hallmark brand, but it's really expanded to different channels like Ion Channel and Lifetime, and those are actually a little bit more edgy and more diverse, and I appreciate them a lot because there is more diversity, and I know we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but Hallmark's, very conservative.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I don't have much experience at all, which is why it's good that you're here. Thank you so much for joining us for this very special episode.
Thank you for having me. Kind of a meta experience after listening to this podcast for so many years to be on it. So, that's nice.
Yeah. Well, let's dive in here. But first, do you have any favorite holiday movies?
Well, if we're going like kind of Hallmark brand Christmas movies, there's two that I tend to watch every year, and they're fairly recent. One is A Christmas Kiss.
Okay.
Which is actually an Ion television movie, so I guess I should clarify that. I really love the main character, Wendy Walton, that she has, like, really great supportive friends, and they're named Tressa and Caroline, and Tressa, in particular, is a little bit more fleshed out than most of the sidekicks. And she has her own career that she's really passionate about, but she's still very supportive. And I actually think this movie passes the Bechdel test, which not a lot of holiday movies do, I don't think.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I like this one. There's even a curse word.
Ooh.
I know. Eye on television. Edgy, like I said.
Uh-huh.
The second one that I really like is The Spirit of Christmas, where the main male character is actually a ghost.
Ooh.
And he was murdered on Christmas Eve 95 years before. And so there's a little bit of the murder mystery element to it. And I honestly can't tell you how it really makes any sense at all that they, like, wind up together as he's a ghost and she's not. But
yeah.
It's just okay. You just go with it. You're like, I buy it. So,
right.
You know, The Spirit of Christmas is worth a watch, in my opinion.
Okay. And is that a Hallmark?
I think so. I watched it on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
and I tried to look it up, and I didn't see what channel it originated on. But kind of looking at these two movies, I did notice that I believe they were both written by a woman.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably adds to, you know, now that I know that, I'm like, oh, that totally makes more sense because I like the female characters better in these movies than a lot of the others that I've seen.
Right.
So.
Right. And the thing about when I was looking into this, because I have a certain subset of holiday movies I watch every year, but beyond that, I don't really venture out.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to research and prepare for this episode, this very special bonus episode.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of people have written essays about why they think that we love these very formulaic holiday movies.
I mean, they're the junk food.
Yeah.
They're soothing. You know exactly how they're going to turn out. It doesn't take a lot of thought. And, you know, the holidays are crazy. You've got family everywhere. You're trying to figure out your shopping. And maybe in some cases you're avoiding your family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just soothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's like big budget action movies like in the summer. I think it's just like the holiday version of that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't require a lot of thought.
Right. And a lot of articles pointed out how beautiful they are and like unrealistically so. If you take the case of New York there's never any graffiti or gum or, just things like that.
I mean, you might even be getting into the bigger budget ones that are actually filmed in the winter. Most of them on the Hallmark Channel are not. There's like little patches of snow and then there's just like beautiful green trees in the background. And you're like, oh, this is a lovely winter scene.
Right.
And so it's like you just see them like, it's so cold and like nobody's breath is showing and all that stuff. So, yeah, I part of me think that's why a lot of them aren't set in big cities is because it just costs more to make them there. And it's like small towns are the best thing ever for our holiday movies.
Right, which is interesting because it plays into a trope.
Oh, my gosh. This trope is honestly one of the ones that I find the most annoying.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of big city career women going to the small town because something to do with their job. You know,
right.
I've got to write this story. I've got to buy this property. They get sent out there and they play it for laughs a lot where it's like this big city woman is there and she can't survive without her constant Wi-Fi and lattes. And just how dare she think she's better than us kind of thing. And I don't like that dichotomy.
Yeah.
And I think it plays into a lot of, like, you know, political identity as well, where it's like, I'm rural, I'm a real American, that
right.
kind of thing. And I dislike that, you know, from my own experience, and I know from your experience, we're both from, like, small towns in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've done the small town life. I'm currently living in my hometown again. And it's just, it glosses over the fact that, you know, I live in a small town or in my county where 70% of people don't have the same political and social opinions as I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, someone coming from the city, probably a little bit more liberal than these people in a small town, not to try to generalize, but I feel like that's often the case. And it just completely glosses over that. And, you know, it's like, that's a big change. There's a lot of things that go into it, not just because you met some hot guy who has a lot of Christmas spirit and it's all going to work out. So it's like that one in particular really does bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets done in so many of them. I would say the majority of them.
Yeah.
It is kind of like, you've been chasing this career, but it doesn't really make you happy.
Yeah.
This small town will make you happy, which, not to diss on small towns, like, if that's to each their own, if that's the lifestyle you want. But I think it just idealizes it too much. And I mean, of course, they're like short and sweet little movies. They're not going into like the complexities of adult relationships.
Right.
But I mean, that's a big change that no one ever really addresses.
Right. And I, in my limited experience with holiday movies, the two tropes that I have observed the most are the holiday hunk, as I've seen him described.
Yes.
The woman comes, for some reason, she has to go to this small town. Perhaps there's like a, her aunt has died and there's a legal thing she's got to go do or something. But she has to go back to this small town for whatever reason.
Sometimes it's to find the best Christmas tree in America. That's happened a few times.
More than once that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like, I have to find the perfect tree or the perfect ex, and like, because of my overly demanding boss. But yeah, it's like there's some reason they've wound up in this town.
Right. And then they meet the holiday hunk and they sort of leave this life that they created for themselves behind in the city. And I always did feel, along with what you were saying, it also just, I get the point they're trying to make in that you're like too tied up in work. You've forgotten like the human element of life. But it is seeing that story over and over again. It is simplified because these movies are, yes, they're like comfort food, they're short, but it is kind of exhausting.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm like, I don't watch as many of these movies as I used to. I mean, there was one point a few years ago where I had literally seen every holiday movie on the Hallmark Channel for a week and on Lifetime movie the same week. And that was like a point of like pride and kind of deep shame, because that was a lot of hours of watching these movies.
Sure.
And so it's like, I'm not as up to date on like this year's batch of movies, which there's many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like the career woman going to the small town and then the workaholic, typically dad.
Yes.
And then he somehow has hired a woman to take care of his kids or decorate his house because he's trying to make the holiday special, but he's not actually taking time out of his busy schedule until this almost manic pixie dream girl walks in, and she's bubbly and not as, you know, done up and organized. And it's almost like they're making fun of her as well, because it's like she's not organized, she doesn't have her life together, but this job like makes her pull it together, and she meets this man and she loves the kids, and then she changes him to realize the importance of family, but she also learns how to get her life together. So yeah, that happens a lot.
Yeah, that's the other trope in my like subset of six movies that I watch every year.
Yeah,
I have noticed is the workaholic dad, like on Christmas Eve.
Yes,
realizing, oh, I've been so wrong all this time. My family is so important.
I know. Also, there is a lot of very bad parenting going on in these Hallmark movies, because, like, the kids are there as plot devices, but they're like, I'm like, you are leaving them unsupervised. There's often some sort of, like, accident where, of course, they're okay, but, you know, they've been in danger. And I'm like, people need to take away your children away. Like, I mean, maybe that would be helpful if you provided good child care. Yet again, not the point of the movies.
Yes, not as exciting.
Yeah, it's also very funny because, like, the same child actors pop up. On, like, the Hallmark movies. It's like, oh, yeah, it was the same kid of the single mom over here, and now he's the kid of the single dad. And it's, like, it's just so funny. I guess once they find a kid actor that works, they just go with it.
Yeah. I bet someone out there has made, like, the universe of holiday movies.
Probably.
I'm sure. If that person is listening, please let us know.
Yes, I would love that list. I mean, and like Hallmark in particular is very bad or good, depending on how you look at it, at hiring the same people every year to do these movies. Like Lacey Chabert of Mean Girls fame has been in so many Hallmark movies.
Oh, really?
Yes. And Candace Cameron Bure, who played DJ on Full House.
Oh.
She is in a lot of them.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that was her name.
The men actually get cycled through a lot more than the women. Like, you'll see, like, one actor in, like, two or three movies, but not to any of the level of Lacey Chabert.
She's the number one?
I think so.
As an actor, I know the dream is to get one successful holiday movie, because they play it every year.
Yeah.
And so you'll at least have that you can depend on. Good for them.
I know. I'm like, that probably is a very sweet job where you're like, I'm going to go make these Christmas movies, guys. I'll be back. Mm-hmm. And you'll see me again next year. So more power to them.
Mm-hmm. Another trope that I found a lot when I was researching this is the workaholic Grinch.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a very good example of this in a movie called It's Christmas Carol. Like, with a comma, an exclamation
point. I see what they did there.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. And she is a book editor.
Mm-hmm.
High-powered. And her former boss, who is actually played by the late, great Carrie Fisher.
Oh.
And she then comes back as all three of the ghosts. And she, you know, has to learn that work isn't everything. And, you know, she goes to the funeral for herself and no one's there and all of these things. The part that made me almost lose my mind is that this incredibly knowledgeable book editor had to Google the basic plot of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah, just so, like, the audience would know. And I'm just like, A, if you're watching this movie, you're probably familiar. And mm-hmm. B, you expect me to believe a literary editor doesn't know one of the most famous stories
ever.
And ever. So I was just like, okay, you got some points for Carrie Fisher, but I think you just lost them.
That's a pretty big misstep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a couple of other variations on the workaholic Grinches that often show up in these movies. And one of them is that there's a Christmas-themed business, like they make gingerbread or, you know, they make plastic candy canes, like various strange Christmas-related items. And this business is in trouble, and it's pretty much the source of jobs for the entire town. So if they lose this business, like, the town is going to die. And then normally the head of the company is a man who's trying to preserve his family's legacy. And not exclusively men, but I feel like that happens more often than women being in charge of these companies. And then a woman who is either a workaholic from a different company that's, like, interested in buying this one out or taking it over comes in, and then, you know, she saves the company at the end. And then, of course, they fall in love and run this company together. But then there's also a different female archetype with the same, like, workaholic company man. And that's just someone who, like, loves Christmas so much, and she can't lose this part of Christmas, and it's been in her childhood. And for some reason, this love of Christmas seems to magically give her powers to save businesses. Like, she comes up with the idea that's going to save everything, even though, like, these people who have been running the company for generations couldn't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she comes up with an innovative idea, and it's all well by Christmas. Normally, they have a Christmas Eve or day, like, deadline. Like, we have to show that we can save the business because, of course, that's when people do the most business of the year. And there's also a different archetype where there's typically a female character who's working really hard at a job that's not her passion.
Uh-huh.
So she could be, like, an interior designer, but she actually really loves designing stage productions, as in A Christmas Kiss.
Uh-huh.
And then she's working so hard at this job, and it typically has something to do with baking or writing or design, kind of already sort of feminine,
mm-hmm.
Or at least thought of as feminine. She's not like a woodworker,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And she's somehow finds a way to be successful and financially secure it, pursuing her passion and, you know, generally with the help of a man in some way. Like, he makes her realize that she needs to, you know, pursue her dreams and things like that. So, yeah, the workaholic Grinches or just workaholics in general is very common, and there's complex variations thereof.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
You've been missing out all these years, Annie.
I suppose so. I mean, I would say of the six or seven I watch every year, four are this, but with men as the workaholic Grinch.
Mm-hmm.
And it does surprise me. I guess it shouldn't. I guess that's the whole point, that they're, yeah, they're always working on Christmas Eve. And it's like at night on Christmas Eve, too.
Yeah.
Like, I've worked on Christmas Eve, but I always got off at, like,
it's always during the day.
Yeah,
that's like, acceptable.
I mean, it's not really, but I at least was able to leave my job. And for I know for some people that that's not even an option. But in the cases of these movies, it absolutely is an option. And they're choosing.
Yeah. I do wonder if that also ties back into A Christmas Carol where, you know, poor little Bob Cratchit is having to negotiate the time off. So I wonder if that's where that archetype came from. And it's like, Bob Cratchit, who wanted to go home and spend time with his family because he is kind of held up as like the ideal family man versus the people who are choosing to do it, you know, and like comment on our materialistic society.
Yeah, which is so interesting because Christmas is pretty materialistic.
Yeah, and it's funny because like there are definitely Hallmark movies where it's like, we got this sponsor and we are going to feature them to no end. And one that I particularly remember is A Christmas Kiss 2, which is not nearly as good as A Christmas Kiss. I will straight up tell you that. Christmas Kiss 2 did premiere on the Hallmark Channel. And in it, there's a very wealthy man whose family runs a department store, but he's always been kind of not taking it seriously. And then he meets his sister's assistant who has really great ideas, but she just can't get them out there. And, you know, they fall in love. And at the end, he proposes, spoiler alert. And with the ring, he opens the box and it's from Kay Jewelers.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, is that the such and such diamond from Kay Jewelers? Like, that's her reaction to this
my goodness.
Proposal and everything. And you're just like, not just non-K, but if I'm with a multimillionaire, I would expect him not to go to K. I mean, that might just be a snob thing for me.
Yeah.
But it was unexpected, to say the least.
Yeah, that is definitely not the first thing I suspect. I mean, who knows? But I don't think that'd be the first thing out of my mouth when someone goes to me.
Yeah, it's like you weren't just like, I was admiring that diamond at Kay Jewelers.
I go every day after work and I would fantasize about this day.
I know, and it's like, I don't think she even worked at like a jewelry store. Like, that was the strangest thing about it. It's like there wasn't really a reason for her to know this diamond. I mean, unless I'm confusing it with a different movie, which is quite possible. They do run together with very similar titles and actresses and such as that. But for some reason, that one really stuck with me. I was like, I see what you did there, Kay Jewelers.
That's funny because we were just talking about, we were watching Home Alone recently.
Yes.
And we were talking about product placement in Home Alone. And a lot of it is pretty well done because I didn't notice it until like this is probably the 100th plus time I've seen that movie.
To be honest, I didn't notice it until you pointed it out.
I was like, Frito-Lays.
I know. And I was like, what? I know. And then you're like, look at it. It's product placement. I'm like, okay. I never noticed, so I guess it didn't work on me.
Or either it did, and you just don't know that it did.
I didn't even know what some of those products were.
Yeah, well.
Like, whatever cereal he was eating, I'm like, I don't recognize that at all.
Well, an excellent study in product placement done correctly then.
Yes, I would say so.
Another trope we got to talk about is princesses, and this came on my radar after listening to NPR recently. And they did a whole deep dive in, what's the big one on Netflix that's really bad?
A Christmas Prince.
A Christmas Prince. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That was came out last year. And this year, A Christmas Prince to the Royal Wedding came out this year, continuing the story of Richard and Amber.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, on the NPR segment, they were trying to get to the bottom of why people were so into this movie that most everyone agreed was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of what we were talking about of like the comfort, the mindless entertainment of it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think being on Netflix is a huge advantage for that particular movie because it's like you weren't going to sit down and watch it on Hallmark probably, mm-hmm. you know, and so it was just maybe a different audience that got to see it, you know, for people who don't have cable. You could watch it anytime. You could pause it. You know, I mean, there's just advantages to being on Netflix, I think. And I think it just hit all of the formulaic things you expect a Princess Christmas movie to hit.
Okay.
You know, it's like one of the things about these prince or princess movies is there's a lot of deception.
Uh-huh.
It almost always starts off with, you know, either the prince is pretending to be a normal person because he wants to have normal interaction, and the girl meets him when he's not the prince, and they sort of get interested. And then, you know, it has to come out that he's the prince and she's been lied to. But the variation on this trope that is actually in A Christmas Prince is Amber, the lead female character, is lying about being a journalist. She has used deception to pretend to be the prince's younger sister's tutor to get into the palace. And that happens fairly often. It's generally like a journalistic angle, and they're trying to get ahead in their career, and they have a very low opinion of the prince and the royal family. And then they start to know them, and they find them charming and just have a difficult, you know, life in the spotlight and living up to the pressures. There's generally a dead parent.
Oh, yes.
I mean, because, you know, the prince has got to become the king.
Yeah.
Somehow. I mean, but actually the dead parent trope is in a lot of these holiday movies where it's like there was a parent who loved Christmas, and that's why one of the characters loves Christmas so much. They're trying to keep it alive. Or it's like some family tragedy happened on Christmas and they've been avoiding it their whole lives. But specifically in A Christmas Prince, the father has died. You never see him. And another trope that you see in these particularly princess or wealthy movies where the commoner is, you know, coming into this world is they always have an ally who knows how things work. So in A Christmas Prince, it's actually Princess Emily, the younger sister, who really embraces Amber. And she actually knows that she's a journalist almost from the beginning, but wants to help Amber get the truth out about her brother, that he's not this playboy kind of thing. And another thing about the princess trope is that once they become a princess or become the love interest, you know, there's the big magical reveal in a beautiful dress and the hair and the makeup is perfect and everyone kind of turns and gasps mm-hmm. and they do that. But then there's always something to show that they're still them, like they're wearing their lucky shoes, like tennis shoes, like they are in A Christmas Prince. Or, mm-hmm. you know, it's like the locket that their mother gave them. There's always something to indicate to you. It's like they're not really changed. They're still them. They're still the normal person that this prince has fallen in love with.
She's still Jenny from the block.
Oh, yes. Or Amber from the diner in this case.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Yes. So, you know, and then there's normally, like, based on the deception, there's some sort of moral dilemma, typically. Like, how do I tell the prince that I'm in love with, I've only known for about 3 days, mm-hmm. that I've been lying to him this whole time, and he trusts me, and he has trust issues because people have tried to use him. And there's also always the villain or villainess character wants something from the prince. Like, they want to be the princess. And so it's like they pretend that they're in love to manipulate them into proposing. And so they're very much out to get our normal girl protagonist. In the case of A Christmas Prince, they break into her room and discover that she has lied about her identity. They also find the documents that she had found that indicate that Prince Richard was adopted and actually isn't the heir to the throne.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting this turn.
Actually, that is, like, one of the most surprising things I've seen in Christmas movies in a long time.
Whoa.
I know, where it's like, he's not really a blood relation to the late king. Don't worry, it works out. The king made a decree before he died that Richard could become king.
Oh, good.
Yes. Just based on how good of a person he was, not because of royal blood or lack thereof. Yes.
Well, there's like that message of like, blood might not be there, but you're still my son.
Yeah. I mean, I actually did appreciate their family dynamic, because a lot of times in these movies, particularly if it's like the wealthy family or the royal family, there's one of the parents is very aloof and is very much only about the perception. And it's like they eventually come around because they've been won over by normal girl charm or see that their son is happy. But I actually got the impression of a warm familial relationship between the parents and Richard and Emily, which was actually kind of nice. I mean, the queen was still like, we've got to think about the country, but she was just much more open and loving than a lot of them are portrayed in the movie, particularly in the beginning.
Huh.
Yeah.
Good review, kind of Christmas Prince.
Oh, yes. I can go into more detail if you would like.
I'm getting that sense.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and then I think another aspect of the princess appeal, as I like to think of it, is that just runs so deep for girls, because you're taught at such a young age, like, this is how you are valued. Mm-hmm. Like, your dad treats you like a little princess. You're supposed to find a man who treats you like a princess to, like, be your worth. And, you know, I think it's just so ingrained that even if you, when you're an adult, you don't buy into it so much, but there's still that aspect of it, of you've been kind of taught societally that this is kind of what you want. This is what you want to achieve. And it's like, then there's all the Disney movies where it's princesses, princesses, princesses. Mm-hmm. And then you have the less problematic movies like Frozen or Moana, but they're still princesses.
Yeah.
They're not normal girls. Mm-hmm. You know, the princesses are the ones you're supposed to care about.
Yeah.
And then additionally, I think that kind of being with a prince represents the ultimate security you could have in your life. They're rich. They're powerful. Like, their family's been around for so long, it's not like suddenly the stock market's going to drop out and they're going to lose everything. I mean, they have a country, you know. So I think, you know, you're never, if you're with a prince, you're never going to have to do a real job. You know, it's like your career is never going to be your focus. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have to do housework, but your role is defined in a very, like, old school femininity. Mm-hmm. Like, this is your role. And so, like, in A Christmas Prince 2, The Royal Wedding, you see Amber, our normal girl, struggling with that. And, you know, trying to modernize it. That's also a very big theme. Like, normal girl comes in and says, well, I'm not going to do it. I think your traditions are stupid. Mm-hmm. And somehow everyone comes to accept this. Like, even the old stodgy royal family is like, oh, okay, I guess because he loves you, like, that's totally fine. But so, you know, just in another way, situations are simplified. But, you know, I think there's multiple reasons why Christmas movies and then princess Christmas movies are so widely appealing.
Yeah. I mean, apart from Frozen, which is not technically a Christmas movie because it's like winter time.
Yeah.
It plays a lot during the Christmas season. I don't think I've seen a Christmas princess movie, and I didn't know until researching this that it was such a big thing.
Yeah, like, there is multiple ones on Netflix, like, not Netflix original ones. Mm-hmm. I think another one that I've watched is A Princess for Christmas.
Oh.
Where the main female character is caring for her orphaned niece and nephew. Their parents have died tragically, but their father was the heir to some sort of title, and so they get invited to go and see their stodgy, rich grandfather who had problems with his son and banished him because he married their mother, who was a commoner and everything. So then her sister comes in and wins the heart of his younger brother and eventually wins over the old curmudgeon grandpa in the process. So, you know, princesses and Christmas just go so well together.
They go hand in hand, apparently.
I mean, because why else would you be dressed up? You got to have the big fancy dress reveal moment.
Mm-hmm.
And How else are you going to do that other than a Christmas Eve ball? Duh. No, there's no other reason to dress up. It's always Christmas Eve, too. And I'm like, do you people not have other things to do?
No, balls to go to.
I have never been invited to a Christmas Eve ball. So, you know, that's why I haven't been in my own princess movie.
That's it.
That's key. If I was invited to a Christmas Eve ball, it would happen.
Everything would change for you.
It would. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have a fancy dress moment.
Mm-hmm.
I would impress all of the aristocracy with my normalness but style.
Uh-huh.
No stopping me.
That's right. We know what to do, but execution.
I know. It's like, you can't just throw yourself a Christmas ball. That's the problem.
Or can you?
Well, they haven't made a Hallmark movie about that yet, so I don't know.
Well, we could be original. We could be trailblazers in
this.
We'll get to work. We've got a couple of days to throw together a Christmas ball.
I know. It's like,
you're all invited.
Yes. What will we do for hors d'oeuvres, though?
Popcorn.
You can't have popcorn at a Christmas Eve ball, Annie.
Well, this is how I impress people, is I provide food that is both well-loved and not typically seen as a rich, fancy thing.
Pigs in a blanket are way better for this instance than popcorn. Just throwing that out there.
We can have both. We can have both.
Yeah.
We have some more tropes to dive into, but first, we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Well, another trope that I wanted to talk about is All I Want for Christmas is a Man.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I am someone who's not really into romance in movies or in life. I don't really like romantic movies. I'm not into romance in life, which for past people I've dated has proved very difficult for them. But I get really tired of seeing this story over and over again. And not to mention that I chafe at the idea that a woman's value is defined on whether or not a man has deemed her valuable. And recently, I was doing my viewing of that premiere Christmas movie.
Oh, yes.
Die Hard.
Much debate about whether it's a Christmas movie, but I will allow it for this podcast.
Let it into the conversation. I was a little annoyed at how annoyed Bruce Willis's character, John McClane, was that his wife, Holly, which I just got doing the research, Holly, Holly, was going by her last name now and not his. They were separated and they were heading towards divorce.
Yeah.
And how she was semi-villainized for taking a step up in her career and moving the family to L.A. And I might be reading way too much into it, but I feel like you're meant to side with John McClane, who wanted to stay in New York and do his cop thing, as opposed to her, who got, like, this opportunity, like a promotion in L.A., and she took it, and he even says in there something like, I wasn't supportive, and I should have been. I'm like, yeah, maybe.
I mean, yeah, well, I mean, she's punished for doing that. I mean, the tower gets invaded, Hans Gruber is gonna kill her.
Yeah.
I mean, she's punished for, you know, taking this job, because if she hadn't, she wouldn't be in that situation.
Right, and in the beginning, when John arrives at this holiday Christmas party at his ex-wife, separated significant other, at her office, this jerk that works with Holly kind of immediately is like, show him the watch, show him the watch. And she's like, no, no, that's okay. And she had received this very nice, expensive Rolex watch for doing a good job at work. Or like helping this deal happen. And I mean, I wouldn't really want to show off my Rolex watch either. That's just not the type of person I am. But in the end, and I'm going to issue a spoiler alert, but this movie's been out for a while.
Well, I've completely spoiled pretty much every movie I've talked about. So
tragedy.
Sorry, everyone.
Like, people couldn't figure it out based on all these tropes that we're talking about.
Yes.
But Holly is hanging outside of a window that's about 30 stories up, and Alan Rickman's character, Hans Gruber, he is holding on to her. Like, the only thing keeping him from falling to his death is by holding on to her and her Rolex watch. And the way that John saves her is he unbuckles the watch, and it falls alongside Hans. Hans to his death. I'm assuming the watch just broke. But then in this, like, happy wrap-up moment, Holly clarifies when someone asks that her name is Holly McClane, going back to her husband's last name. And the whole thing read to me like she learned her lesson from this venture on focusing on her career, which, again, I can see how it gets twisted of, like, getting too wrapped up in your career. But it didn't feel like that. It felt like...
No, I mean, I didn't really see, like, the indications of that from her. I think she was truly just punished because she made a decision for her family based on her career and not her husband's, is what I ultimately think that sort of dynamic was about. Because, it wasn't shown that, like, the kids were neglected or anything by her. In fact, I might be misremembering, but I feel like she was the primary child care provider anyway.
Yeah.
Even working this, like, very nice career.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in the interest of the kids, it probably was better that they went with her.
Yeah, and we've done an episode before on women taking their husband's last name and all the stuff around that. If she wants to take his last name, like, I have no problem with that. But it felt... more like the messaging was she was shown the error in her ways by putting her and what she thought was best for her family first. And so was pivoting back to be on John McClane's side. And that the whole thing that she's being unreasonable for using her maiden name, which I have such a problem with that term, but for her maiden name in the first place when they are separated.
Yeah, I'm like, I think it's just another thing where it's like John McClane didn't want the divorce, didn't want the separation. So how dare she take steps that he didn't agree with?
Yeah. And some people did read the whole watch thing as an anti-capitalist message, which I think it can be both.
I mean, I could see that, but I feel like they just made such a big deal about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could interpret it that way. I personally don't really see it that way, but, you know, to each his own.
Yeah. But it is, either way, it is very, the watch is very symbolic. And, like, when he unbuckles it at the end. This was, I don't watch Die Hard every year. So it's been a while since I've seen it, especially since I think I started working on this show and started looking at things more critically. I still liked the movie, but I was kind of,
I know. I feel like that every time we watch a movie together and you're just like pointing these things out to me, I'm like, I don't think I would have noticed that. But you're totally right.
Yeah. And I've said it before on this show. I'll say it again, but I think you can have a critical eye towards something and still like it. Like, I like Die Hard. I think we can make better things. You know, you can, I think it's good to be able to pick up on the messaging you see. Maybe you don't even realize in movies.
I know. I think that's, I mean, I've already kind of mentioned that I don't watch nearly as many holiday movies, like Hallmark holiday movies, as I used to because, you know, it does get annoying that women are basically told your career isn't what makes you happy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some of them, they've had it where a career woman is unhappy with her life and she makes a wish and suddenly she's like transported back like 10 years into the past to like catch the one that got away, and then, you know, at the end she's shown with children and she's so much more happy and fulfilled than she was when she just had her career.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so I don't know if it's because I'm more aware of such things or I'm just like, you know, just the climate we're in politically now or what it is, but it's like those things bother me when they used to not.
Yeah. And like I said, as someone who is not into romance, I really internalized seeing this story play out over and over again that to be successful, to be happy, you needed to find the man. Because these are all very heterosexual stories we're talking
about. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it doesn't allow a woman to be happy without a man. I completely agree about that. And a lot of them, you know, where the main character is kind of sworn off men, she just got out of a bad relationship, or, you know, her parents had a difficult marriage and she doesn't want to do that, that kind of thing. Well, her friends, her little group are focused on, you just need to find someone, you'll find someone. And so it's like you've got the trope of the woman who's not looking for it but suddenly finds the love of her life. But you also kind of have another trope where this woman is so busy looking for it, she misses what's right in front of her.
Of course,
where it's like her best friend or, you know, a new acquaintance where she's seen some man that she's just like instantly attracted to. And so she doesn't see the other guy that's ultimately better for her and they're going to wind up together. So, yeah, I mean, it's not like a single lady's finding happiness in their own life.
No, and I hadn't realized until working on this show how much I internalized the messaging that you are incomplete, you cannot be happy until you accomplish this family unit, very heterosexual family unit.
Yes. I mean, I think that that messaging shows up in so many other places. And I think that's why, like I said, I didn't notice it for so long. But yeah, and then I started seeing it and I'm just like, oh, I don't want to have another movie where someone who is probably seems happy at the beginning of the movie, at least the career-driven woman typically is, you know, stressed out, but, like, living her life. And then to just say, oh, now I found this man. And she always finds a man. Like, she might fall in love with the small town she's in as well and all the people, but without that romantic component, she probably wouldn't stay. Because, you know, the end scene is typically of them realizing that she's going to stay, and then they're kissing, and, you know, it culminates with them, you know, sealing the fact that they're in a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, I read a lot of accounts of people who were talking about how difficult it can be during the holidays if you are single.
Yeah.
And yeah, for me, for a long time, my family's mostly given up. But it was always this question of, when are you going to settle down? That's what people were asking me during the holidays. Like, your time is running.
Yeah, that old biological clock.
Yeah, it's ticking. Like, you've had your fun, but it's time for you. Like, I've literally had it put that way to me before. Like, you've had your fun times. You need to settle down. As if getting married and having kids is going to not be fun at all.
Yeah. I know. And it's like, that pressure is placed more on women than on men. I mean, there are the elements in some holiday movies where it's like the playboy rich guy who meets the right woman and decides he is wants to be committed. There's more to life than partying, that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, the onus is generally on women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just care too much about your career. You don't have time for kids with your career.
Yeah.
You don't make time for men. How do you think you're ever going to be in a relationship?
Yeah.
And not to say that, like, there isn't a balancing act. Like, when you've got a job and you're in a relationship, I mean, of course those issues are going to come up. But it's demonized.
Yeah.
It's demonized so much. And that's very frustrating as a woman watching it. And you're just like, and generally the woman is the one making the sacrifices.
Yeah.
For people to be together. You know, career woman comes to the small town, saves something. Well, holiday hunk isn't moving back to the city with her.
No.
You know, she's going to stay in the small town. There's not discussions of, like, how are we going to split our time between the city for my career and then the small town for the idealized life we're going to have here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's making the sacrifices.
Yeah. And again, this isn't limited at all by any means to holiday movies.
Because
I was thinking of, like, Gone Girl, when she gets so frustrated because they have to move back to this, like, tiny town.
Mm-hmm. Small town in Missouri, small rural town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, if that's for you, that's for you. But just to, like, it is a big change. And if you're used to the city, if you like the city, it's not always like you go to a small town and,
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, as I said, with both of us being from small towns, I mean, there's things in cities that you like. I mean, variety of food. I like Uber and Lyft. None of that where I'm from.
Delivery at 3 a.m. Thank you.
Yeah. I was like, when I was living in Chicago, and I was like, they're going to bring me a giant pizza to my door.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is one of the most amazing things that's ever happened to me.
Yes.
Not that you can't get pizza delivered in my hometown, but I mean, it was deep dish, just tons of cheese, deliciousness. So, yeah.
And I do, when I go and visit my hometown, there are things that I love about it too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more just that the kind of broad strokes of, this one is clearly the better one than this one. I think that's what I have a problem with.
Yeah, I mean, and that is one of the things that I really did want to talk about is, like, in the idealization of the small town, there aren't a lot of people of color. There's very little LGBTQ representation, if any.
Yeah.
I mean, and typically if there is, you know, a queer character, they don't have a relationship. They're very one-dimensional. They're here to help you get dressed, you know.
Yeah.
They're not full-fledged characters, which, I mean, you can say that for almost any character in a holiday movie, but it's just even more glaring.
Yeah.
And, you know, for years and years and years on Hallmark, there was not a single movie where any of the main, like, romantic characters were people of color.
Yeah.
And I think you said now that there's, like, one out of their 22 this year actually has people of color. And it's like, I watched an ION television movie the other day that actually had an interracial couple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was, like, actually kind of surprised to see that. I mean, pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
But because you don't see those things. And, you know, I have not seen any holiday movies where the main romantic characters are queer.
Yeah, and I would love to see that. It would be so refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's like a lot of people who would want to watch that movie.
Yeah.
Just maybe not Hallmark's target audience, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe this is a place where Netflix and places like that can, you know, bring some differences to these rather formulaic movies.
Yeah. Yeah, they can lead the way. But I'd love to see, like, Hallmark slowly, because then the target audience who might not be used to seeing these things and might be a little not on board with those things.
Yeah.
Might.
Yeah, Hallmark is changing in the fact that a lot of the secondary characters, well, not a lot, but more than there used to be, and mm-hmm. a lot of the, like, background characters at the scene of this lodge or whatever are people of color. But you almost get the sense that maybe it's tokenism.
Yeah.
Because it's like they know it's like, oh, we got to put a black person in here because they're going to accuse us of being racist. Like, well, you've had, like... 10 plus years of just only white people in your movies, though.
In your many, many, many movies.
Yes. I mean, it's not like they're lacking opportunities to right. hire people. I mean, like I said, 22 new movies this season alone. They started yeah. October 27th.
They were ready to go.
Yeah.
Halloween had not even happened yet.
No.
They're on the Christmas train. Which I'm sure is a Christmas movie, the Christmas train.
There
it's
is
like the Polar Express.
It was the world their signature or featured Hallmark movie of the season last year was the Christmas train.
There you go. There's yeah. a movie for everything.
Yes, starring Danny Glover, Dermot Mulroney, Joan Cusack.
Interesting cast.
Yeah, I mean they put their big bucks into their like signature Hallmark oh, feature movies.
I see.
Yes, and. Kimberly Paisley, I think. Anyway, yeah, they got some recognizable people in these yeah. in this movie. I was like, oh my goodness, it was not a good movie. I watched it; it was not great. But there was a train, and it was Christmas time, so I guess I can't be too upset. The title was very specific.
Yeah, it was spot on in this case.
Yes.
To bring it back to Die Hard, before we move on. It was interesting because that movie takes place in the early 90s, and it does have people of color in it, but they feel very caricatured and like it's
yeah.
playing on stereotypes. So her boss is like Mr. Nakatomi, I think.
A Japanese businessman. No offense to Japanese businessman.
No.
I get it, but...
No, but it felt very like... one-dimensional, not thought mm-hmm. out.
Died very early in the movie, too.
He did.
Pretty violently, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And then there's... So Holly has a nanny take care of her kids, and she's Hispanic, and mm-hmm. of course she's undocumented. That's a whole plot point in the movie. And then there's two black characters, and... Yeah, they just feel kind of like they're playing on stereotypes. I will say the one that's played by Fred Winslow from Family Matters.
Yeah, I was about to say, I liked his character because he was like the smartest cop
he
on
was.
The ground.
Nobody would listen to him.
I know, and that and like maybe that is also something to do with his race. I
yeah,
don't know,
no,
but I'm like,
absolutely.
He was the only one that knew what was going on.
Yeah, but his... And this could honestly be a critique of the whole movie, but his story did feel very like... Not as fleshed out as
yeah.
it could have been. It felt very, what's the word? Not trite, but like, what's the thing that we can play with the heartstrings? Oh, this.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is definitely an area where all of our entertainment could improve, but especially,
yes.
it seems especially apparent in the holiday movie genre. There,
yeah.
it's all white.
Like I would say, particularly Hallmark, like Lifetime and ION Television are a little bit more adventurous. I don't know if you should even call that adventurous, but like they're not just plain white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they have interracial movies or movies that feature like black casts, which is really great to see. I enjoy those movies as much as I enjoy any holiday movie. I mean, I don't think it's a big deal, but I do think it would be nice if. You know, Hallmark normalized some things.
Yes.
Particularly, like, I imagine their audience is, at least based on the commercials that I see, a lot of them have dogs and heart problems because they're always like, get this product for your dog or get this thing for your heart. And so you're like, it's a little, maybe I'm stereotyping, but that's what their commercials lead me to believe. So they're older, probably more conservative people. And I do think, like, you know, just seeing things in media and normalizing them is a big part of change.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I would like for these, you know, movies to be more on the forefront than the afterthought, where they're like, oh, yeah, more people are okay with, like, black people in their holiday movies. I guess we'll throw a few in. Like, no, like, make the effort to show things how they are, not because you feel pressure from someone being like, why is everybody white, but because you want to show these things.
Yeah. And just for having
and reflect life.
Yeah. And a new story, a different thing, something new. Before we move on, some Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer news. Okay, so this film, the puppet one, was recently named the most popular Christmas movie, and it was also called out as sexist. And the conservatives were like, look what the liberals are ruining now. And I will say, I watched this like a couple of nights ago. I think it's totally sexist. But
it is.
It is so.
It's very sexist.
It's very sexist, but in a way that I can mostly ignore or excuse. For the time. And I mean, it's always beneficial to, like, have a conversation with children about the entertainment they're consuming. I think that's where the problem comes in.
Right.
But to me, it was kind of like, sexist. The thing that really stood out more was how terrible people were to him, to Rudolph.
I know. I'm like, Santa is evil.
He's mean.
In that movie, I'm like, he's racist.
Yeah. He's like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with your face? Hide that. Cover that up.
I know. It's like, and it's like, how dare his father, like, bring him out? Why isn't his father ashamed of him? He should be ashamed of him. And you're just like, Santa's supposed to be nice, but he's really not at all in that movie. And that I noticed even when I was a kid. I was like, Santa's a jerk to Rudolph. Like, you should crash that sleigh.
A proponent of media literacy, knowing the messages in the media you consume, and especially at a young age, because we do internalize that stuff very young.
Yeah, and I definitely think that, like, you know, parents just want to put, like, a movie on for their kids at the holidays, and it's like, I watched this when I was a kid. But, you know, give those things a rewatch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because you're going to pick up on a lot of things you don't remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it isn't exactly what you want your kid to see, or you do want them to see it, but you want to talk to them about it.
Yes. Yes. So I think that is great advice.
I'm pro watching children's movies just in general, but do it with a purpose.
Yeah. Yes. Be responsible in your viewership.
Yes.
So we have a little bit more for you, but first we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. And we're back with a brief thing about Christmas songs, holiday songs. Yes. And there is one really big one we have to talk about, and that is Baby, It's Cold Outside. Baby, It's Cold Outside is a song written by Frank Loesser in 1944, and it was a parlor act he performed with his wife, Lynn Garland. It won an Academy Award in 1949 after Frank sold the rights to MGM, much to Lynn's horror. It sounds like he didn't really consult her about it. And it was featured in the film Neptune's Daughter. Though there's no direct mention of Christmas in the lyrics, it has become associated with the holiday because it's all about winter and staying warm. Mm-hmm. Or is it?
Oh, no.
So it's a duet popularly sung by a man and a woman in a call and response form where the man is attempting to convince the woman to stay at his house instead of going home as she's, like, getting ready to leave. He's trying to get her to stay. Mm-hmm. And in the score, the male part, or the part that's typically played by the male, is labeled wolf, and the female part, or the part that's typically played by a female, is labeled mouse. And it's really hard to ignore the predator-prey aspect of that. And it has become a lightning rod for controversy due to the lyrics like this one, where the mouse asks, "Say, what's in this drink?"
Yeah,
and the wolf's unrelenting pressure and unwillingness to take no for an answer. I know people have counted how many times she says no, and he keeps saying, "Come on, don't embarrass me, don't hurt my pride, like, please."
Yeah.
And by today's standards, the whole thing does feel very date rapey. It is hard, at least for me, and I think for a lot of people, not to hear that.
Yeah, like when I listened to the lyrics, or I saw them written out, I think a few years ago, and I was like, oh my God, I've listened to this so many times just because, you know, inescapable.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, once you really start paying attention, you're like, oh my goodness, like this woman might be in danger.
Yeah, it does sound actually kind of menacing.
I know, it's like, actually she is in danger. Is the modern ear hears that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, in Neptune's Daughter, the movie that it was featured in, the song was performed twice and it swapped the gender roles.
Mm-hmm.
Some feminists and scholars have come to defense of the song, saying that we need to consider the historical and cultural context and the time it was written. And they note that all of the mouse's excuses are based on other people. Well, her, and again, it's mostly a woman, but it doesn't specify that it has to be. But what will her mother, father, brother, neighbors think? And that she truly does want to stay the night, and she's looking for an excuse to stay the night.
Right.
And a professor at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, wrote about the song and points out that at the time it was written, which was World War II, social norms were changing rapidly and women were experiencing more sexual freedom. And in that context, yeah, I suppose you could read it that way. According to music historian Thomas Rees, when the song came out, it was scandalous for a woman to be alone with a man drinking, and her primary concern would be being judged by those around her and her reputation getting ruined, perhaps being able to say it wasn't safe for me to drive because there wasn't really taxis or Lyft back then would be a way that she could protect her reputation. And I get that, but sure or not, it is dangerously close to rape culture. No means yes.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it that is why it's uncomfortable. And it's like clearly our society is still struggling with that. What does no mean? I mean, as a woman, we're like, no means no.
Right. It means no.
But there's confusion. I use heavy quotes.
Yeah.
And it like we were saying, if you're going to like let your kids listen to this song, you need to explain this.
Yeah.
And you need to explain to them, like, no means no, like, boys mm-hmm. and girls, because you don't end rape culture with only one gender learning.
Right.
Everybody needs to learn. And it's like, you know, if you find the song uncomfortable, I completely understand why.
Yeah.
If you want to keep listening to it and knowing the context, because context is very important, good for you. You know, but I mean, it shouldn't just be something that we just listen to because it's been on the radio for, like, our whole lives.
Yeah.
You know, it's representative of a lot of things, like I said, that our culture is still really struggling with.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of attitude also shows up in a lot of Hallmark movies, mm-hmm. to be honest, where it's like the male and female characters hate each other. But then they're slowly thrown together by circumstances, and like he wears her down or something like that. Yeah. And it's like that's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
And it's romanticized.
It is. I mean, even going back to the workaholic dad, where he hires this woman to take care of his kids, well, they become an item. But what if the attraction wasn't mutual?
Right.
Your employer mm-hmm. is hitting on you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just so many layers to these things, and it's like they show you the most simplified, happy, clean version of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what we want from our Hallmark holiday movies. So right. It's like, you know, I don't expect them to be like, and this was the Christmas we discussed rape. Mm, you know,
yeah.
It's just more things to be aware of. And it's like, unfortunately, these like silly entertainment things, there's so much more to them than any of us want to think about.
Yeah. And I mean, there's certain aspects of society that we see reflected that we don't want to take a more critical eye to. And I know a lot of people, we've talked about this a lot on the show, of people point to all of this conversation around baby, it's cold outside, and say mm-hmm. you're ruining flirtation. Like you're making it impossible for romance to happen. And I think what you're saying is you're making it impossible for me to just pursue like a non-consensual, like,
yeah,
because it was romanticized, so it was okay, it was flirty,
right?
But that's not romantic for one person involved.
No, I know. It's like, I hate that argument where it's like, well, how could a woman and a man in a business situation ever be alone together, because like she could claim harassment? I'm like, that's, I get there's like very rare cases where that might happen, but that's not what's generally going on. And generally, women aren't playing hard to get. They really just want to be left alone. And it's scary.
Yeah.
And disturbing. And that's so hard to explain to like male friends or yeah. male family members, just being like how scary it can be to walk down a street
mm-hmm.
and have people yell at you.
Oh, yeah. Or when I remember explaining to my dad once about how when someone would come up to me, a guy at a bar or something would come up and ask like, oh, you know, can I have your number? Let's go dance or whatever. And I would say no. And I would tense immediately because I know it's coming. I'm going to get yelled at for basically just minding my own business and wanting to be left alone.
Yeah. Another thing specifically about baby, it's cold outside, is that it's on the woman that her reputation would be damaged.
Yep.
It's on her to repeatedly say no.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say it'd be one and done.
Right.
You know, and then I think this kind of song also speaks to another thing that I really see about our society that bothers me, is that the woman is supposed to be in control of two people's actions.
Yeah.
You know, it's the thing that goes back like, well, what were you wearing that night? Mm-hmm. I'm like, so it's like, because you decided to wear something, you are somehow responsible for another human being's actions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's like, I think there's an element of that into the song on either interpretation. If you're saying, like, this is what it meant at the time versus how it sounds now, like, the onus is on the woman to be protecting her reputation, to not be seen as a loose woman, you know, and it's just other stuff that I don't think men have to consider very much, because it's boys will be boys, which I've always hated that phrase.
Me too.
Because it implies that men don't have self-control.
Yeah.
That they are a weak gender, that they can't control their actions, which I think if I was a man, I'd be offended by.
I think I would like to hope most men, especially people listening to the show, are offended by it.
Yes.
But yeah, it is interesting too how, like, the maleness has typically been associated with strength, and yet that is a very weak thing to say. Like, you have no control.
I know, and I'm like, that's why I find it so bizarre. It's like, you can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. But our society seems to think it's completely acceptable. I'm like, it's just not logical. You're saying different things, but just so it makes you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, that what's annoying about people who are saying, like, oh, the liberals are ruining this thing now. It's like, just because you don't want to think about something and you don't want to have to evaluate how you live your life doesn't mean that they're ruining something.
Right.
You know, it's, yeah. They're not the same thing. And yeah, it's difficult. It's hard to examine the things you like and the media you consume and the opinions you have, like, in the deepest, darkest recesses of your mind that you don't want to admit to other people. Like, you know, it's hard. It's not comfortable, but we need to do it. Everyone needs to do it. Like, you need to think about what you're consuming.
Yes.
And then how that affects what you put out into the world.
Get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I will say to anyone who's listening to this and is like, oh, I love Baby It's Cold Outside. I mean, we're not.
It's so catchy.
It is very catchy.
Oh, my gosh.
And again, as long as you're kind of aware, and I think, just aware of why it can be seen as problematic and why some people really have a problem with it, then more power to you.
Yeah, and just, like, don't be rude to people who, like, might be offended by it. Just if they're like, oh, I don't like the song, can we change it? Just change the song.
It's
really not that big of a deal.
No. And it is a very popular song. I believe as of recording this, there's over 80 different people have made a cover of Baby It's Cold Outside.
Wow.
In November 2018, one radio station in Cleveland, Ohio banned the song. Several Canadian broadcasters followed suit, including CBC Radio, while another radio station in Kentucky played it nonstop for the opposite reason.
Yes.
Why would anyone want to hear a song nonstop? One thing, but okay.
They got to prove a point.
Yeah. Ugh, what an annoying point.
Yeah.
How annoyingly done. when these stations that banned the song surveyed their listenership, though, about whether or not they should reinstate it, an overwhelming majority in all cases supported putting it back in rotation. But we're not the only ones that have had this interpretation at all. You probably didn't think that, but just to be clear. In 2012, Key & Peele parodied the song, and Funny or Die did the same in 2015 with the mouse hitting on the wolf, hitting it literally, over the head with a shovel and shouting, this is a completely inappropriate song. And SNL also parodied it in 2015 with Kenan Thompson impersonating Bill Cosby.
Oh. Yeah, that's not an association you want anymore with a Christmas song, for sure.
No. Or at all.
No.
But despite this, or maybe because of it, Baby It's Cold Outside is doing better than ever. Sales are going up, digital sales going up, not down. There's a version with updated lyrics that I really dig. Most, I don't want to say conservative, but, you know, people that are angry about this whole thing,
they
really don't dig it. But I liked it by Lydia Lisa and Josiah Lemansky called Baby, I'm Cool With That.
Mm-hmm.
And the proceeds of the song go to organizations focused on providing help to survivors of sexual violence. And whether or not you think the original version needed an update, I think it's still fun. Like, I can hear Baby, It's Cold Outside, and if I don't pay too much attention to it, it is catchy. It's when I start listening to lyrics that I get it kind of like, But I really liked Baby, I'm Cool With That, because it's basically like, I really can't stay. And he's like, Baby, I'm cool with that. If we're going to keep recording it,
yeah,
let's mix it up some.
That's fair.
Yeah, because yeah. I mean, like, right this year, I think two versions were recorded. Let's see something different. Or we can, I mean, you know, we could get rid of it altogether. I don't think that'll ever happen, but.
Oh, no. And I don't necessarily say that that should happen,
mm-hmm.
because I think, you know, you shouldn't glorify things that happened in the past, but you should be aware of them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like our culture has roots in what happened in the, like, at the time this song was recorded. You know, I mean, it's like you can't completely ignore it, but ignoring and glorifying are very different things, which I think has also been a source of confusion for some people in our society.
Yeah, I would agree. So I have two honorable mentions that I don't really want to get into, but they do come up in terms of sexism in holiday songs. And one is Santa Baby,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty much about a woman, or how people, some people read it. It's pretty much about a woman trying to seduce Santa for gifts. And then I saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, which also comes under fire for being sexist. So you listeners can think about that one. But that brings us to the end of this, our bonus holiday deep dive. Not trying to ruin your media, but be more
I know, it's like
cognizant of what you're consuming.
It's like maybe just listen to this after the holidays, after you've watched all the movies, and you can think about it for next year if you mm-hmm. need to. Well, I guess that should have been at the beginning of the podcast.
But. Add in a disclaimer.
Yes.
I'm someone who, like, as long as it's not outright terrible, I'll just point out a thing and I'll still enjoy a movie. Like,
oh, yeah.
I've been planning a feminist alien series night forever where I'm just going to, I've already told my friends, deal with it. I'm going to point out all of this stuff while we're watching it and I'm going to have a wonderful time.
Yes.
But yeah, whatever you celebrate, we hope that you're having a happy and safe, restful, relaxing holiday, or if you're
celebration of any sort,
or getting prepared for the new year, the upcoming new year. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kate.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. This is definitely a new experience for me, but it was nice, so thank you.
Yes, and listeners, if you have any thoughts on anything, any holiday movies, songs, or anything else, you can email us at momstuff@howstuffworks.com. You can also find us on Twitter at momstuffpodcast and on Instagram at Stuff Mom Never Told You. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Andrew Howard, and thanks to you for listening.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.